Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast about the human beings behind the commits. I'm here today with Christos Paloukas, who is in the WordPress community, works at Presidium. Tell me, actually, why don't you, I'll let you introduce yourself. What do you do, and who are you, and where in the world are you?
I'm in Greece. I'm Christos, and I do work at Presidium. It's so much easier when the host does the introductions, but I love, as a host myself, for podcasts I do, passing it off to the guest. So I've been in the IT space since, I don't know, since school, I guess, but like formally since 2010 or 2012. 2010 was an iconic year for me when I moved to Greece from Chicago, Illinois, born and raised in Chicago, Burbank, Illinois, to be specific, a suburb just outside of Chicago. Born in Evergreen Park. This is the part where I talk about long walks on the beach and how I like them, right?
Yeah.
I'm a cat person.
There's not very many beaches in Chicago, though, right?
Oh. Well, there are.
Are there?
Yeah, well, very many. Does it count as one? Like, you know, like Lake Shore. There's a lake. There's not an ocean. It kind of smells funny. I don't know. Yeah, I wasn't a fan.
We have a smelly lake here, too.
Lakes are weird. Especially Chicago. Could you imagine how many corpses are in there from like the mafia days? It's like rolled up rugs getting tossed. Go ahead.
I was gonna say I'm in Salt Lake City, so we have obviously the Great Salt Lake, and that smells weird for completely different reasons. Yeah. not so much the mafia though.
Yeah, good point. Actually, when I was in school, a fun random tangent, there was kind of a thing to. Okay, so, you know, people get shot in Chicago all the time. You kind of get desensitized to it for all the forced reasons. But it was a thing to, I don't know, have a shooting of sorts, burn the car, and have the car disposed of in the lake.
Okay.
Like, I mean, there's so many layers of messed up on that, with that.
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
Greece is much more peaceful. Greece has nice weather. Greece is nice. Got the islands.
What took you to Greece?
Oh, I just ended up coming to Greece so I can get some Cisco certifications to, like, I don't know, expand my knowledge in IT. And whether I did it in the States or whether I did it in Greece, it would have been the same kind of story. Everything would be in English, so it would have kind of worked for me. I do speak Greek. My Greek writing, it's not there. The military helped. There's conscription in Greece, so if you want citizenship, you have to go to the military as if you were born a male. For 9 months, it was for me, 12 months now. For some reason, it's even longer, and we keep spending money on, I don't know, like F-16s and our military as if we're ever going to actually go to war. But what was I talking about? The Greek and the English and the speaking.
Yes, and going to Greece to do a Cisco certification.
Yeah, I ended up doing all that. But I ended up finding myself in a relationship that I was kind of committed to at the time. And then I found work. And work turned into the military. And I don't know, time passed and I'm still here. And it's been over a decade. It's been 15 years.
That's impressive.
25 now. Yeah, it's been 15 years.
How's that Cisco certification working for you?
I was just talking about this today with one of my coworkers. He was talking about getting the CCNA, and I told him that the best thing I ever did in my Cisco career was to stop taking those exams. It was the most like relieving thing. It was, I think, 2 or 3 years ago when I had to take the CCNP security or something like greater to continue having my Cisco certifications. And I never used like them ever in my professional career. Sure, it's great. That's what I told them too. You get good knowledge. You learn about how networks work. We were talking about the OSI model in comparison to the TCP IP model. I hate that like we still use terms like volumetric and OS and like layer 4 and layer 3 attacks. For Presidium Edge, we were talking about this, how like, you know, L3 and L4 attacks are cut off at the edge. But I hate it. I can't stand it because the whole world works off the TCP/IP stack, right? OSI is great for troubleshooting. You have to know it as an IT guy. But I mean, why do we still have to refer to things formally using the OSI stack?
There was a point in time when I was doing tech support where, and I was doing, well, So the longer story is I used to do tech support for MSN when MSN was a thing, and when
Crazy.
MSN was actually rivaling AOL to some extent, as the like the thing that you click on to get internet, like when that was a thing. Now everybody just has internet all the time. So I did that, and then I moved from MSN to basically the phone company that did DSL support. And a bunch of people that I knew had or were taking Cisco certification, and I considered it for a minute. But like at the time, we had so there was a point in time where before I joined the phone company, they had given people Cisco modems, and so or Cisco routers actually, and so it would have been marginally helpful, like you actually would be working with some of the things that maybe you would be talking about, because no one really cares about the networking stuff. And like when you're doing DSL tech support, like you're not doing networking. You're doing like the networking hitting the router, and but you're not doing any internal networking, right? So it would have been like kind of tangentially okay, but we were also phasing that out. And rolling out, this is when, like, sort of at the beginning of when phone companies were like rebranding, like getting some vendor and rebranding the modem and putting their logo on it, and like so it was, and there's a crappy remote modem that didn't let you do anything at all, and the Cisco let you do everything in the world. So I never did it, and I never actually thought that anyone who did take it used any of that information. So you just confirmed that suspicion. I mean, it looks good, right? It looks good to have a little like CCNA, whatever,
Does
like
it?
badge.
That's
Well,
what
I mean, maybe some, maybe not so much anymore. It was more impressive like 10 years ago, 15
thought
years
it
ago.
was too, right? So just I have that cute little CCNA thing with the little, but then you learn at the end of the day that, like, I don't know, there was this scandal. I guess it wasn't a scandal, but more of a realization where large companies like that, like Cisco specifically, I don't want to talk trash about Cisco. They're a whole podcast, but you figure out eventually that they get make more of their most of their money off their huge partnerships that they have, like, gold partner, silver partner, whatever of Cisco, and through training. I don't remember the percentage, but it was huge, like 30, 40, 50. 50 was probably too much, but they make it off training and training centers and certifications, which makes sense because one of my problems then was I paid for the CCNP security exam and it was like 350, if I remember correctly, 300, 350 euro. It's a lump sum to get certified in something you don't use. Plus, the other thing that bugged me is, I don't know, let's go back to the CCNA thing where I was talking to the coworker. Back then, we would learn, basic routing protocols, and then EIGRP. No one uses EIGRP. No one.
But it's good to theoretically know that things exist, right?
Yeah, not EIGRP, but it's good to know how the Euro timeout works. Like, they should really focus on, well, they should have focused on, it's been so long now, like, routing protocols, or maybe even expand to things like BGP that's widely used. But no, you have to be a CCNP level or maybe even higher than for BGP to actually get into the curriculum.
And for anyone who's listening who is not following the rapid fire abbreviations, we will definitely move on from this part of the podcast. What do you do exactly at Proceedium? Your LinkedIn says you are a performance engineer. What does a performance engineer do?
My LinkedIn is right. So, performance engineers, we make shit faster. We identify
Okay, cool. How do you
bottlenecks.
engineer speed?
How do you engineer speed? You start from the ground up, I guess, by using high speed technologies, or using, like, if you want to go really technical, you'd start at the probably operating system level. If not, even if we have, like, any, I don't know, machine geeks or like actual hardware geeks in the house, they would probably argue it starts at the machine level, which does make sense too. NVMEs do play a role. They're significantly faster than, like, the older SSDs, the solid state disks and spinning disks. They do die out much faster. But anyway, the role of a performance engineer, I guess, is relative to what they're focusing on. So at Presidium, we do managed WordPress hosting. So I focus on WordPress. So I focus on web technologies. It could be database. It could be the server itself, the web server, whether it's Nginx or Apache, optimizing the actual web server for the specific site in question. Because WordPress is a very, it's a beast with many faces. you can do pretty much everything on mm-hmm. WordPress, and people do pretty much everything on WordPress, meaning that every time I get a performance audit, which is one of my responsibilities, it's usually like everything from the beginning. Writing something like a SOP for audits would be very vague, because then you'd have to find something and then rabbit hole. Sure, they're all like low-hanging fruit, I don't know, slow queries, for example, that you kind of knock out really quick. But as a whole, without changing or potentially ruining the website, performance work is kind of hard. If you asked me, like, what are the most common things you... Or no, the most common I can answer. But if you ask me what are the best practices, I would tell you there's no such thing. I mean, it really depends on your website. Sure, there are, again, like, I don't know, be careful with your images, be careful with how things load, be aware of what like the critical or the critical rendering path is, be careful with your CSS. But if you don't actually get your hands dirty, you're not gonna be able to identify anything.
Yeah, anyway. I think that's a really interesting sort of take on performance. I think that's really grounded in sort of reality. I think we both work at hosts, and obviously mm-hmm. hosts want to say that ours is the fastest, but how you define fast depends largely on what you're sort of like emphasizing. One of the things that Pantheon emphasizes is that everything should be in the caching layer in the CDN, and we give everybody a CDN from the get-go, and that's a thing that we've done for a really long time. And so to really benefit from, you know, the speed that Pantheon can give you, like, yes, obviously we have like containerization and we use Google Cloud and whatever, and those things mm-hmm. are like help things be fast, but like ideally you're never hitting the application server at all to make those database queries or whatever. You're just hitting a cached page in a CDN somewhere that stays there for, you know, an extended period of time. And then you don't need to worry how fast the machine is, because the machine can be slow and it's only hopefully going to be serving, you know, a request to a single visitor who just, you know, gets the short straw.
Yeah. Well, offloading things to see, what's funny is that like in performance, lots of the solutions end up being the problem in some way, shape or form. You mentioned caching, CDN, which basically is caching for, I don't know, static assets. That can help you alleviate like what's going on the actual server itself. But then other sorts of caching, maybe like full page caching on the edge, something like Presidium Edge does. It's relatively new. It's pretty cool. With the static and dynamic caching on the edge mm-hmm. only tells me that, okay, yeah, you can really, really benefit your site if you don't have like logged in user traffic or
right.
It's not an LMS kind of deal or yep. it's a WooCommerce shop that's yep. not necessarily built.
Yep. Those are all the things that fall down. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, with WooCommerce, you can always do like that. I always forget what it's called. The adaptive caching. Not adaptive. What's the word for when you cache only certain parts of the page?
Very cache fragment? No.
Yeah. Fragment caching. Yeah. Exactly. You can do that, but you have to be like in sync completely with the developer. You have to know that like a certain banner or a certain part of the page is going to be served from the cache, and you have to identify those parts of the page.
Yeah,
and you can't change those either. But like caching is one of the best and worst things ever, because it's like the easiest way to hide all your performance issues. On the other side of things, it's maybe the easiest way to make your site significantly faster, you know, closer to the user. That's why we always do our troubleshooting without caching. Like if you want.
Yeah, fix the root cause and then you don't need to worry so much. You don't need to rely so much on your caching.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
What's a good term? I've used this in a WordPress meetup in Athens. Caching is a smart way to do less steps for certain things. But I don't know. I make pizzas and I've been doing it like religiously lately because it's becoming an obsession. If I do less steps in my pizza making process, my dough isn't going to come out right. mm-hmm. So I don't know. It doesn't apply to every situation, the mm-hmm. caching.
Yep. What took you into the WordPress world?
Honest to God, it was just an ad. There's no fun or cool story here. I'm not an old WordPress contributor. I was taught to use WordPress as a go-to in high school, but that's just because I think it wasn't part of the like formal curriculum back then. I graduated high school in 2009, but I think it was because our electronics/computer science teacher used WordPress at some point in his life. So Mr. Nichols, Richard Nichols, great guy, awesome guy, loved him.
Shout out to Mr. Nichols.
Hi, Mr. Nichols. I think I can call him Richard now, can I? Hi,
Richard. It's always weird with teachers, yeah.
You get over it. But yeah, I think it was because it was his go-to at the time.
And you were telling me earlier that you're now involved in the WordCamp Athens organization. Tell me about how that happened.
Yeah, I'm a co-organizer. I was asked if I wanted to be part of it. I gave one of those like, really sure, yes, I definitely want to be part of it. Mm-hmm. And now towards the end, there's like a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah. And so for someone who doesn't know what's involved in organizing a camp, or even like, you know, like a local meetup, but we'll talk about camps. I've done this, so I already sort of know this story, but what does that look like, for you, especially maybe if this is like your first, WordCamp that you've been involved in?
It's the first WordCamp. I was a volunteer for, WordCamp Europe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Twice, once in Athens and once in Torino. That was good because it was all very structured and I just had to pick a role and do my role.
You just have to show up. Yep.
Yeah, pretty much. And you wear your different colored shirt or whatever.
Yep. Yep.
Now we did do that. We did something similar like that. We did spread out roles, but you have to fill in blanks all over the place. Like you just have to keep helping each other. And sure, there's always going to be an imbalance. Like we've got 12 different organizers. All 12 are either running their own business or working somewhere else. Mm-hmm. They're all busy half the time. The other half the time, they're, I don't know, living their lives. Let's not forget that. And then they have WordCamp organizing going on too.
Yep.
And I'll be straight with everyone. In the beginning, I was one of the most inactive out of the 12. And now these past 2 weeks, I'm the guy responding to emails, which responding to emails, like for the sponsors team, doesn't really mean like, you know, you write a 5-minute email. You have to look all over the place to gather the information that you need for that particular person so you can be, again, aware of their situation before you can formulate a reply. And if something is like taking long with this confirmation process that, you know, is going on with WordCamp Central now, it's our fault that it's taking too long. It's not, we're the direct point of contact. It's like you go to a restaurant and you have a problem. I worked in service for a long time and I use service based analogies very often, but you go to a restaurant and you're not happy with something, or you find like a huge hair or multiple pieces of hair or even something that's moving that shouldn't be moving on your plate. the waiter's gonna take the shit.
right,
and then it kind of goes up the
And then you have a Karen that asks to talk to the manager, and then the manager pulls out the head chef.
And it just makes everyone's day really bad. There has to be a lot of patience. There has to be a lot of, from what I'm saying, there has to be a lot of understanding. Things do magically seem to work, you know, because we have to do it. We're at the point that we have to do it. I think there's like a certain demarcation point where if you really can't handle, which I think I was there at that demarcation point. I think I was the weak link until I had to not be the weak link. Mm-hmm. And now I'm quite tired. But there's still some pushing to go. There's a lot of last minute things to go. And we're actually getting a lot of like engagement from people, mostly positive. People asking for... people asking to sponsor, obviously, people asking to volunteer. Volunteering seems to be a lot easier, or to finding volunteers seems to be a lot easier than it is to find sponsors.
Yes.
WordCamp Central has been very good about the portion that they've given us for the event. I'm not going to lie there.
When is WordCamp Athens?
When is?
Yeah, when?
November 8th.
November 8th. Oh yeah, my birthday.
Hey, happy birthday, WordCamp Athens.
Unfortunately I won't be going to Athens for my birthday this year.
Keyword this year.
I'd like to go to Athens for my birthday. I was involved in WordCamp Salt Lake City for a long time. I started out as a volunteer, and then I was And then I get more involved, and then eventually I was doing like just working with like speakers and stuff and sponsors. And then I was co-organizing, and I co-organized for 2 years, and then I solo organized for 2 years, and then I was pretty done. And that also like that last year that I organized was also probably 2018, so like just before COVID. So like yeah, then COVID happened. Well, A, we didn't have one in 2019 because nobody in the community was like able or willing to pick up the reins after I basically carried it for, I mean, at that point, close to 4 years. Like, I mean, it was a, me and one other person were lead organizing in the 2 years before I was just fully organizing, but or lead organizing, but yeah, nobody else was willing to pick up the reins, and then COVID hit, and that kind of decimated our like local meetup group. Like we still haven't really picked up. There is a somebody posted in our Utah WordCamp Slack like last week, and it was like the first time. Like it had gotten to the point where Slack cuts off after 90 days or whatever. So like it was like the first message in the general channel after the last cutoff. Like it had been that long that it had been quiet.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's and it's sad. I would like to have a community, but I also like it's a lot of work, and I don't want to do the work involved in like
You guys
lifting the
do
community on my
meetup?
own shoulders.
Has it like kind of fixed? Do you guys do meetups? Because I know the Athens. Oh, this was before I was like really involved in WordPress, aside from making a website using WordPress. The Athens community had the same issue. Like after COVID, we're probably still not back up to speed since the before Christos days.
Yeah, no, we haven't. I mean, if there are meetups, they're not happening through our Slack. There used to be like a Salt Lake Valley meetup, and there used to be like a couple people that would meet up in like Park City. And a lot of those people, to be fair, moved out of Utah. So like that also, it's not just the COVID that killed everything. It's also like I think there's almost like a COVID exodus that happened too. Like people, like when everybody was remote working, then everybody decided that they could like move other places and live other places. And so that I think affected things too. But yeah, most of the people that were like leading the charge for like making sure that the meetups are happening and the WordCamps and stuff are happening kind of got burned out.
No, that makes sense. But
Yeah.
what surprises me, like I pulled up, that's why I'm looking around. I'm on the laptop. I pulled up the results of last year's WordCamp Larissa. I'm sure you've never heard of Larissa, right?
Nope.
Yeah, it's I think the third. Oh man, the Larissa people are gonna get upset with me. It's either the third or I think it's the third or fourth largest city in Greece. It's up near Mount Olympus,
Okay.
and they had 242 attendees, and it's got like some other fun stuff from 12 different cities in Greece. 50% newcomers, 13 speakers, 14 volunteers, 242 for a very local, I'd say,
Yeah.
WordCamp, not even
Yeah.
in the first or second largest city. And everything went really well. We were all very surprised. Well, I don't know if they were, because I wasn't expecting it. But I was very surprised to see that smaller part of Greece that geographically kind of works for everyone because it's kind of in the middle, if you don't
Yeah, that
count
helps. Yeah.
Peloponnese. Yeah.
Yeah.
It went very well, which was very inspirational, especially for WordCamp Athens this year.
Yeah, location matters a lot. It's like I and it's interesting. The WordPress events versus and how they have or have not come back after COVID versus Drupal events, I'm learning. Because I think that for the most part, like Drupal events are still smaller than WordPress events or than they used to be before COVID, but they are happening, and like the local like sort of regional or city-based sort of meetup groups are like making Drupal camps. I just came back from Bay Area Drupal Camp, Bad Camp, last month. And it was a pretty nice, I mean, it was a cool turnout. It felt like a small WordCamp, and that was cool. And there's been a couple others that I've seen. For the most part, there are very few of those things happening in the WordPress space in the States outside of, you know, the flagships, which I find interesting and disheartening. And there's possibly drama involved in that. I know at least in a couple cases, some folks have chosen to make their own event as opposed to doing a WordPress community support WordPress WordCamp event. Instead of like the organizers of WordCamp Minneapolis St. Paul decided to make SumConf instead, which I'll be speaking at in a couple months. Which, I mean, I think that's great, but also like there's stuff there. There's, I think, Brad Williams announced a while ago, Wordadelphia, to do like a small WordPress event in Philly. Wordadelphia. Yeah. Cause Philadelphia, Wordadelphia. I don't know. It's a weird name. I think there's another one that was done, by the WordCamp Buffalo, organizers. That's, I think it's Color Code or something to that effect, which is actually going to be like in different places, but it started in Buffalo. And so like there's these other things, and obviously PressConf, but that's not really like, I mean, that was descended from Pressnomics, so it's sort of, but like it's nice to see that there are other things happening outside of just the WordCamp ecosystem.
Yeah, plus I like things like PressConf specifically that you mentioned, or okay, so there's the WordPress community and there's WordPress community events where we're supposed to be, from my understanding, and maybe the point of view of a relative newcomer is like, you know, significant. From my understanding, it's supposed to be a little bit more community based than it is business based, kind of like the WordPress org Slack, right?
Yep.
It's definitely community based, not. But then you have people turning these kind of events that are geared towards community into more commercial events.
Yeah.
Whereas PressConf, they're there to make money. You're there to make connections. You're there to make money. And it's clear, right? So kind of like PostStatus and the WordPress org.
Slack.
I really like when it's clear, when it's clear cut. Like, you know, you're there to make connections, to make money, to progress your business. Whereas with WordCamps, I'm kind of confused. I think it's a bit of a mix, and I don't know where the balance should be, would be, or where people even want the balance to be.
That's a really fair point. I know as a when I was wrangling speakers for WordCamp Salt Lake City, the Salt Lake City meetups often had a very strong small business sort of focus. And part of that, or a large part of that, is Salt Lake City in particular, Utah broadly, and even more broad than that, I would say, like the dominant culture in the state is very big on sort of small business and kind of do-it-yourself kind of things. So obviously that filters down into a lot of people that go to the meetups, a lot of people that are interested in the camps are small business oriented or small business owners there or whatever. And so obviously as an organizer trying to come up with a schedule, you want to cater to that, but also balance with like, also we should have some dev tracks too. Also we should have some other things that aren't businessy that are like, and how to like balance that so that you have like, I mean, it's almost like an art to really get the right schedule. It's like making the perfect playlist. I'm really big on making play. Like, I used to be a DJ. If you've ever seen the movie High Fidelity, he like, you know, there's this like,
I haven't.
All through the movie, John Cusack's character like talks about like how he like making the perfect playlist is like a common sort of thread, and like he would sit down and like just like spend hours listening to records and like organizing things in the right way to get the perfect flow. It has to start this way. It has to like, then you have to come down a little bit, then you go up a little bit, you know, like just like making it into an experience, which
I think,
you know, obviously that is a maybe a relic of records and cassettes and CDs and not streaming services. But like the same thing is true for like crafting a schedule for an event like that, like where you have to like understand who your audience is, and figure out, like, and also, like, timing makes a difference. End of the day talks, everybody's tired, everybody's sleepy, especially at, like, post lunch. Like, you need to, like, have something that's going to bring a lot of energy, otherwise everybody's going to fall asleep. Like, you know, there's all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, risk too. So, like, we got a bunch of newcomers for speakers, and we wanted newcomers for speakers under the idea. But then you have the thought in the back of your head, if that X well-known person isn't giving a talk, are people going to, I don't know, actually sit in the auditorium?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but you have to, like, you can maybe, like, if you, like, sandwich them with other talks that people do know or something, like, you can, like, kind of find ways to cheat. But yeah, or like yeah, it's a really interesting, like, that was actually one of the things that I thought was really fun about like the speaker stuff is always something I really enjoyed working with, like, both from like, because this is also like how you're presenting in some ways your local community, right? And like, it's not just, we're not just here independent of time and place and just talking about WordPress. We're also putting on a show for by and for the people of our city and our community.
Yeah.
And so you want that to, you know, be look good. You want your community to be cool. And people to, like, walk away and be like, you want people to come from out of state even, or out of the city.
It gets, like, difficult. I don't know. Like, one of the, I don't even know if I should be talking about this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Sorry, WordPress, if you don't like it. One of the issues that we faced was not having enough submissions from females.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, the speakers list is going to be, you know, there's not going to be the diversity that we'd want.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily our fault. So we want to, what we talked about was that we want to, like, take some time during the event to encourage more female people to, you know, submit submissions for talks.
I had that same problem. And the solution to that problem is asking.
Oh, like going, like, straight to people and being,
yes,
like,
going to people and just inviting them, say, hey, I'm the organizer for WordCamp, blah, 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 blah. Do you want to come and speak? And oftentimes the answer is yes. And that's cool. And then you can kind of curate that speaker list, because for a long time, our WordCamp was in 100% reliant on the submissions that we got. And yeah, there's only so much that you can sort of coerce the submissions, and, you know, because the dominant culture is largely white males, then the speakers that you end up getting are predominantly white males. Yeah, I presented actually at Open West, back in, like, I don't know, 2018, 2019 or something, before COVID again. And I was presenting on being an ally. And the way that their speaker submission worked, and I think it's actually similar to the way WordCamp Europe does it now. Maybe they just other things that they add to that that I don't know about behind the scenes. But the way that Open West did submissions is, it was sort of like you entered into a system, and then names and stuff are removed from all of the submissions so that it's judged purely on the content of the submission. So you don't know who submitted it. And the idea is that that's more. The idea is that that's more egalitarian, right? Because you're just basing your acceptance or rejection based on the subject matter.
Okay.
The problem with that I observed was that 80 to 90% of the speakers that were selected for that conference were male. And most of them were white male. And here I am giving a talk on allyship. And, like, I'm like, I told the organizer, like, look, like, I'm giving this talk and I'm going to blast you because, like, all of the keynotes were men except for one. Like, most of the talks were by men. And I was like, you know, I think that there are better ways of doing this. And I see what you're doing, but also I have a counterpoint and I'm going to talk about that. Is that okay? He said yes. I think if you just rely on the submissions and you don't do sort of your own outreach, then you're going to just get it naturally, because that's kind of how the tech industry just works.
And it's upsetting too, like all the other teams, volunteer wise, organizing wise.
Yeah.
We have a great mix. And, you know, without great mix, everyone knows this already, but without diversity, you don't have innovation. Without innovation, you don't do anything. I mean, it's been proven over and over and over.
Yeah. I feel strongly about, like, you know, like, I don't even think it's like, it's not about like it's not equal or giving some people like special access. It's like, no, we need to just make the table bigger. And if that means we need to invite people to the table, like the white guys are going to come to the table. Like they're just gonna, because they're like, that's their perspective. That's their privilege that they've lived with their whole lives. Yeah. They just know that they can go out and do things. And it's harder when there's not an actual invitation, like, no, you can come to the table too, and we, like, you are welcome at this table. Like, we don't want it to just be a bunch of white dudes at a conference, at an event, like anything. Yeah,
I know. I don't want to fall under any like stereotype stuff, but no, I totally agree. And I mean, that's how inclusivity like starts, right? Inclusivity doesn't mean like the door's open, you can enter, because no one's gonna come in.
Yeah. Right.
It's more of a, we have to go to them. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of my first posts that I, when I moved, when I went to Blue Sky, I have it as a pinned post. One of the first things that I don't know if you bleat, or I don't know what the right word for posting on Blue Sky is.
Bleeding.
Yeah, sure. Definitely bleeding. One of the first things that I posted was about, like, you know, things that were happening and the discourse in the United States. And I was just saying, like, you know, inclusivity is not about people taking your piece of the pie. It's about saying, hey, everyone, there's pie here. Do you want some?
Yeah. Share the pie.
Yeah, exactly.
Share and actually invite people into eating the pie with you. It's not just about saying, you know, putting a sign up there that says this.
And if you need more pie, you can make more pie. It's not like there's people that are going to take your pie.
Yeah. I don't know. Fear is a big topic. I think we could talk about fear for like 10 different podcasts, but fear really sets everyone back on everything at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Fear and comfort, I guess they go hand in hand.
Yeah. Well, I did save some time because I definitely want to talk about cats.
Yes. So you go first. Tell me about your cats.
Well, I wanted to, because I still like, so we talked previously about like you take your cat camping. And I think that's awesome. I would like a camping cat. I also think that you're a little bit spoiled because you can just like take, you can just go to a beach in Greece on an island and then kind of be remote. But talk about the story of how you first took your cat on a camping trip and how that's worked since. Because I think that people who like, I see videos every once in a while of people who have taken their cats camping or taken their cats to the beach even. But most people assume that cats and beaches and camping are not a thing that you do. Dogs and camping seem fine, but cats and camping always seems weird.
I don't know. Okay, I'll give you the story. Before that, David DiBella, one of our most recent partners, him and his wife were totally shocked when they went out to the Rockies and they saw more cats than dogs. Sure, they were leashed, which I don't know how I feel about like a leashed cat, but my cat was like a crazy cat that, I don't know, some family that couldn't handle him. They ended up finding some vet that was going to euthanize him for being... too aggressive. The cat wasn't aggressive, and I picked up on it through the animal welfare volunteering that I do, and I said, no, I'm taking this cat. So I basically stole the cat. And there were some legal implications for the veterinary in question, which that's how it should have been. But anyway, it all came down to like necessity at the end of the day. I couldn't find someone to take care of my cat. He had gotten much better, like behavior wise the first year or two actually were very difficult, but we ended up going to camping, and I figured it'd be okay. I don't know, there's always risk, Because he's not a leash cat. You mm-hmm. can't put a leash on him. I tried during like the first days of, or the first weeks maybe of COVID, when they said we can go out if we're taking our pet out. Mm-hmm. That didn't go well for the leash or for the cat. But I just got to the island. I let the cat out and I was dumb. It took a long time to get there. And I felt bad for the cat. So I was like, okay, cool. As, now that we took this tiny little boat to get to Kato Kufonisi, mm-hmm. it's down Kufonisi, I thought it'd be a good idea to take him out as soon as, you know, I could, rather than finding a spot to, you know, make camp and then be like, here, this is home. Dumbest idea ever. The cat freaked out. He saw the water. There was like a whoosh of the wave, and he just ran up this side of this really steep hill. And I tried getting him down, but eventually I was going to either maybe get the cat down and have like hurt myself severely. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I had to abandon it. So I kind of slept close there. I made camp somewhere further back and I slept close to that area. And I went for it in the morning, and I was basically just, you know, climbing the side of this really steep hill with a can of tuna in my hand to get the cat down. And fortunately I did get the cat down and everything went well. Since then, the second time was kind of difficult. We went to Donusa, which is an island that's conquered by cats. There are countless cats there, and my cat's kind of fighter slash killer. So he didn't have a great time there. Anafi was the island that he kind of loved, and even if he's been three times to Anafi. When I take him out on that one particular beach that I camp on, he's like, all right, cool, I know where I am. I hate you. I don't know why you do this to me. I don't belong here. Why are you taking me here? Fine. Screw yourself. But he's like, okay, cool, I'm good. And since then, like this year, we went to Ravdos, which is the most southern point in Europe. It's this island, maybe 2 hours, 2.5 hours from Crete. Everything was fine. Actually, he's kind of getting older too, and he's got FIV, he's got the feline leukemia, and he's got the, it's another autoimmune disease. The gingivostomatitis, is that how you say it? I don't know. God. It's another feline one that really messes with him. So he's a lot calmer because of all that, I guess, too, and the drugs. But he would just stick around the tent and basically be a guard dog.
So basically what I'm hearing is immersion therapy. Like,
yeah, it organically.
Kind of just did it, and then he eventually figured it out.
Yeah, totally organic. Totally. Yeah. I did see some other cats. Like, there was this girl on the boat on our way back to Athens, and she had her cat. She was sleeping, and she had her cat out of the crate on her chest while she was sleeping. And I was thinking, wow, like on the boat, not even on a beach or anything, on the boat. And I did meet another person. I just remember this too. I did meet another person that had a cat. That brought the cat with them. It wasn't a cat that was at the island of Gavdos for camping. So it kind of works sometimes, I guess.
So there's something that you mentioned in there that I wanted to pull out a little bit, is like you did some animal sort of rescue kind of stuff, or animal advocacy kind of thing. Like, tell me about that.
I haven't stopped. I did distance myself at some point. I haven't stopped since I got my first dog, and that's like, fuck. Since 2012, I think, when I started working at Codex, some office down in Athens. My first dog was a rescue, and all my cats are rescues. I don't know. Okay, so rescuing and everything. Some weird stuff happens in the world of animals and humans. Some like really messed up shit, though. I mean, even down to like rape. And at some point, I had to distance myself, like rape, like humans raping animals. I had to distance myself at some point because Greek law at that point was not sufficient enough to punish cases like that, and we had a case like that, and unfortunately the case got into the hands of the boys and girls in the animal welfare group, which, because, you know, the courts didn't do much at all other than a $3,000 fine. The law has been changed since, not so long ago, maybe 2 years ago now. At least fines, they stack. And there is potential prison time. Back then, it was kind of whatever you did, oh, fine, you get a $3,000 fine and you're off the hook. That didn't work for the people of the Animal Society, the Animal Rescue Society, or call it whatever you want. And it turned into violence, like individual violence. And I had to distance myself at that point. But sooner or later, I would find a cat and I would keep it. That's Duke. That's my biggest one. There was another one, Maisie. She's a total ditz. She's my partner's cat. My partner, she found her outside of my house, which was totally my fault because I removed her from the bakery that was across the street from my house because they had issues with the cat twice in the same day and put it in near my apartment. You know, before we can contact people to see if someone can take the cat and take care of it. I ended up not being at home the time my partner, she returned home. And she just called me and she's like, I found this wonderful cat downstairs and I brought it upstairs. And I'm thinking, oh man, what color is the cat? And she says, white and orange. And I was like, I know the cat. And, you know, she would ask too, like, could we keep it? Could we keep it? And I said, well, it's already in the house. I mean, we can't
Once it's in the house, you can't kick it out. Yeah.
I know. It's a law of nature. Like, the cat distribution system itself never fails. I don't know if she understood the concept when I said it's in the house. I think she thought that maybe we could put it back outside. And I said, it's not a thing now. Now it's our cat. Exactly. And now I've got two other blind ones. One has one eye. He's kind of a pirate. Her name is Lala. And her brother Mimi has no eyes. He's blind. And he's the first blind animal I've ever had, actually. But they do everything. Mm-hmm. He literally goes around. So the one in the bathroom is relatively old in the house. And it's got like those external pipes for water, plumbing, going around. He goes and climbs on those tiny little pipes that are like nailed to the wall. And I'm thinking, how can you do this? You don't have eyes.
How did you get involved in animal rescue, though?
I got a dog.
You just got a dog. You just rescued a dog.
Yeah, it just kind of happened. And I mean, if you have like, I'm a total softy for these things. I can't handle it. Like if I ever killed a human, it would probably be over something like animal abuse. I'm a total softy for that. I can't help myself. They're so perfect. I literally, that's how I started. No fun story or anything. No family. We didn't have pets. I was raised with like strictly birds. And nothing better, nothing more.
I didn't have pets until I was early teens. And then my stepmom's sister was breeding Yorkshire Terriers. And so we got one of her Yorkie pups, and then I had a dog. from zero pets basically to dog, that was good. He was cool. His name is Pirate, because that was the name of the game that we played. It was sort of like a white elephant. Like everybody brings a present, and then you can steal the present. But like we called it Pirate. And he was a pirate gift that nobody else wanted to steal from me. So he was named Pirate. And then nothing until after I graduated and my partner got a job at the Humane Society of Utah. And she was in receiving, which is where all of the surrendered animals go. And then there's a whole like... In a shelter like that, there's a whole like evaluation process that kind of boils down to, do we think this animal will be adoptable? Because they get more animals surrendered than the number of animals they're able to adopt out. And there are no kill shelters in Utah. The Humane Society would like to be one, but is not. They just don't have the capacity. So they do need to like make yay or nay calls, and that was always kind of awful. She eventually moved into adoptions, and then she moved into the vet clinic, and those were much better. But obviously, through this process, we're like taking animals home, learning about like how the difference between like, you know, an animal that doesn't do well in the shelter, that doesn't necessarily mean like your experience, like it doesn't necessarily mean that they are aggressive. It just means that they aren't doing well in the shelter. Like this is a really stressful environment, and maybe this animal is a little bit more sensitive to that than
same for humans. Humans would react the same way.
Exactly. That's always been and so all of our cats have been either quasi rescued, like rescued from the shelter. Or they came from like an actual animal rescue, and we currently have three, and our oldest has cancer, but she's had cancer for like 2 or 3 years.
That's the thing about cats, man. They could have like 5-3 different autoimmune diseases, Duke, and he's still a fighter and a camper, literally.
Yeah. And she's the sweetest thing. She's my daughter's cat. She's like the most empathetic animal. Like she like in the world.
So
And
cute. Too cute.
But we can talk about cats all day. We probably would talk about cats all day. We don't, this
Easy.
isn't necessarily a cat podcast. I mean, it
Not
could
yet.
be a cat podcast. It'll be a different podcast. But you have a podcast too, don't you?
I do. I started Uncast with Presidio, and we only have one episode with Kareem talking about fair, but like the context is kind of hard to find people. So it has to be, you have to identify a problem in and around the WordPress ecosystem, and you have to be relative to the solution of the problem to be on the show. I hope it doesn't get stuck at Kareem. Good show with Kareem. And then there's an interviewee one, kind of like this one, Get Another Person Behind the Tech. I called it a 3Q interview. I probably have to change the title because it was supposed to be three questions, and now it's about 30 to 45 minutes long. It just kind of evolved.
That's how it works. That's why I don't make rules for myself.
Yeah, I'm learning. I'm learning.
Well, where can people find you on the internet?
I guess I can Google Christos Paloukas, but I mean, something much easier would be I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn, kind of. I did a couple posts recently, not a huge fan, but Twitter for sure, slash Paloukas. I don't know where else. YouTube, I guess. There's like podcasts there. I have an old version of myself that used to write classical music. So if you find,
There you
I kind of do it sometimes too secretly. If you find some, I don't even talk about this, man. I don't even know why I mentioned this
That's a whole
now.
other podcast. We need to get you back and we can talk about your classical music.
Yeah, I abandoned that kind of. But if you do search Christos Paloukas, you might find some songs.
Well, thank you so much, Christos, for coming on. And check out Christos's podcast or the one
Thank you.
episode. And go find him at WordCamp Athens if you
Yeah.
happen to be in Greece on November 8th. Thanks again for coming. And yeah, we'll see
Thanks
you
for
on the
having me.
internet.
It was a
You're welcome.
pleasure. Hope to host you too.
Absolutely.